From the front lines of the Lone Star State, you're listening to the Eyes of Texas, or a podcast. Powered by InsideTexas.com. Bringing you the insider knowledge on the players, coaches, recruits, and game plans of the Texas Longhorns. We dance with the one who brung you, and we don't quit till Gabriel blows his horn. Welcome to the 40 Acres.
Mr. President, how you doing, sir? Darryl, can we get Darryl up here? I know you have a presentation to make. James Street is here. Coy, Darryl, Coach. Here he comes. You chose yourself a football game to attend, didn't you?
One of the great games of all time, without question. And I was up in the booth, the ABC booth, at halftime, and it's there. I got to brag a little. They asked me what was going to happen the second half. Said both teams were going to score, but that I thought that what would really determine the second half would be whether Texas had the ability in the fourth quarter to come through. And you did.
Mr. President,
hey,
we're not.
How do you feel?
I've got to be the happiest guy in America tonight.
This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
Welcome to the Eyes of Texas, our podcast brought to you by InsideTexas.com, your one-stop shopping for all things Texas football, recruiting, X's and O's, team. We've got you covered. We even do a little basketball and baseball, thanks to Joe Cook. With me today is Justin Wells. Justin, how's it going?
It is a wonderful evening here in Tyler, Texas. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm your humble host, Eric Nolene. Justin and I, of course, are two of the main writers at InsideTexas.com. We cover recruiting. We cover team. We do it as a tandem. And we're going to have you covered for the next hour or so. Pretty big week with the commitments, Justin. Let's start with that. Vernon Broughton, it doesn't get any bigger than that, huh?
You know, they haven't had a war daddy on the defensive line since probably Malcolm Brown. And so to get a guy like that at that position of need in a head-to-head over A&M and Ohio State, not to mention his versatility, it could play different spots along the line. This is a bigger commitment than I think people really know.
Yeah, you can always tell by how good a recruitment is, by how crazy the recruitment gets, or how good a recruit is. When you've got LSU pursuing late, and they're recruiting very well. Ohio State's recruiting very well. Texas A&M does a really good job of recruiting the defensive line with Terry Price. So it kind of drove this one to a frenzy and a fever pitch. The market kind of drives the craziness, and obviously you could tell that Vernon is a highly coveted player. You mentioned it's the biggest commitment on the D-line since Malcolm Brown. That's true. I agree with that. It's also he's kind of a mix between Hassan Ridgeway's upside and Malcolm Brown's mental makeup. It just makes for a great combination. I have him as a five-star, which I think is, you know, it's a little more projection with him than most five-stars. Five-stars are kind of sure things, barring injury. But I think Vernon is a sure thing because of his work ethic.
The thing about Broughton, too, is, you know, it's a need position. The perception in state was that the defensive linemen were leaving the state or going to A&M, you know, via like DeMarvin Leal did last year. I think Texas feared that somewhat and really made sure Broughton and his family understood how important and how much of a priority. And I think we saw that with the constant interaction with his mother, the constant engaging on social media. Vernon wasn't just a big-time player at a big-time spot. And I like your comp when you split basically some of Ridgeway and some of Malcolm Brown. I like that Broughton used to play basketball. He's got those great feet, especially for a big guy at 285 pounds. This is a big get on like different levels, but really, in my opinion, it really helps with the in-state perception. I mean, this is something that Texas really needs to keep these big guys. I like to call them war daddies, those high four-star, five-star defensive linemen that really, you know, win in the trenches. And I think Vernon Broughton is the culmination of that. And give Oscar Giles a ton of credit. This guy really takes it on the chin a lot when it comes to recruiting this position over the last couple of cycles. He did a tremendous job here with his Vernon's family, with the entire, you know, from top to bottom. I think this is, like I said, this is a win on multiple levels, not only position of need, perception in state, but adding a war daddy in, at a spot that it's a premier spot.
Yeah, he's definitely a war daddy. You watch him, you watch some of his basketball highlights and he's crossing people over at 6'5", 270 pounds. So, you know, he's 285 now. Just a really uncommon guy. I think he has movement skills similar to Solomon Thomas, who was a five-star, except he's actually, he's got better length. He's 6'5". Solomon was about 6'3". Just a really uncommon player. And then you have the mental makeup that he has. Credit to his mother, Yolanda, who's, I think she's a war daddy. The way she's wired, the type of mom she is with her kids, you know, she gave up her career so that she could be closer to home and raise her kids. And she took a job at the high school level rather than coaching college basketball. Tells you a lot about her, but also says a lot about how, you know, how close she is to her kids. That's why I always felt like Vernon Pry wasn't going to go too far from home. I remember asking her last September, I was like, well, what if Stanford comes calling? And she's like, oh, I hope he doesn't go that far. And I usually use Stanford as a question like that to lead it, because what parent doesn't want their kid to go to Stanford? Most of them do. And she's like, oh, no, he should stay closer than that. So that was kind of telling. You know, A&M made it very interesting. They do a good job recruiting defensive line. I think it's always funny when people bring up Von Miller and Myles Garrett as if he has anything in common with those players. He doesn't. Much more of a big guy that you move up and down the line as opposed to just rushing off the edge. But he can come off the edge too because of those feet and his flexibility. And as far as perception goes, I think you're already feeling a little bit of that. You know, they got another commitment today. We'll get into that in a minute. But it just seems like there's just a little bit more confidence. Texas seems like it's holding its head a little bit higher. I think some other commits definitely took notice. You know, before we get to Van Fillinger, let's talk about two of the other priority defensive linemen. Alfred Collins is one that, you know, he's right there in Vernon's class. He's also a basketball player. He's another war daddy. You know, I might not have him as a five-star, but he's definitely a high four-star. Has similar basketball skills, similar uncommon size. Where's Texas sit with him?
Well, going into the season, I think going into the spring, he took some unofficials, you know, the junior day circuit, saw a few schools, did a few of the camp. He's kind of a quiet kid. He'll open up if you get him one-on-one, and he's very well, you know, he's actually pretty interesting kid once you get him one-on-one. Our precocious Joe Cook has actually done a pretty good job covering Alfred. And the last time he came in, which was for the pool party on June 21st, 22nd, when he came in that weekend, there was a sense that, you know, it was like a three-way tie between Texas A&M and Alabama. There was a sense that nobody really had a lead, but everybody had a horse in the race. And then once he left this last unofficial, more and more you get we're hearing that Texas looks good, that Texas looks better, that if you wanted to give someone a small percentage bump, it would be Texas. And the way that Oscar Giles and Craig Nivar have handled this recruitment in particular. And so with Collins, like you said, when you bring in Broughton, you said that the Texas coaches are a little more relaxed today. Now they're a little more, they can do, there's a little more flexibility within the class. And that's how big of a get Vernon Broughton is. It allows the class to sort of go into a new shape, a new direction before it's fully formed. And I think that's fun for Tom Herman strategically with his recruiting staff, with all those guys. And so with Alfred Collins, with Broughton in the mix, now Alfred Collins becomes that guy. And the talking about a timeline, he had mentioned taking some more official visits and doing it in the fall. But then we've also heard recently that this could be a decision he makes before the beginning of his senior season in August. And so I think with Broughton, this is really going to open up different things and different potential scenarios for this 2020 class, which you and I have already had. We're 6 months into this class. Well, essentially, you start about a year and a half, so we're almost 24 months into this, and this class is just really it's been a little roller coaster. It's been a little emotionally bending, and I think with Broughton, it finally kind of slowed down a little bit because we knew Texas was going to have success this summer recruiting. It was just a matter of these kids, you know, staying with timelines and you know, doing things they said they were going to do. And with Broughton in, and now they're looking better with Alfred Collins, it gives them flexibility to take a kid like the big kid from Corner Canyon High School in Draper, Utah today. Tell me about the back-to-back job Oscar Giles just did, and let's talk a little bit about Van Fillinger.
Yeah, it's a Fillinger, I'm pretty sure, but I knew that you were going to mess that up. But I'm not even sure that I'm right, but I think I am.
You're probably right.
I ended the post this morning by saying that yesterday they installed the ceiling, and then today they put in the floor with Fillinger. Fillinger is what they're looking for in the assembly line, defensive lineman. You're probably going to redshirt them. You're going to keep developing them. And, you know, in a couple of years, they're going to kick your ass with a full-grown man. That's the whole point. You know, you're going to take your elite talent like Vernon and hopefully Collins from their standpoint, and then you're going to supplement them with the Fillingers, of course, that are pushing the program forward with culture and workouts and just being patient and developing and trusting the staff. And at some point, you know, you're going to have these guys that it's kind of like what you're going to see out of Taquan Graham. You know, we're familiar with Taquan because he's been playing early, basically out of need. But Taquan Graham is basically what they're looking for, where finally you're going to see a different player. You know, Taquan's not going to be the young guy anymore. He's going to be a veteran. They want to get to a point where you're seeing that veteran for the first time on the field. And, you know, you do that by stockpiling talent in, you know, back-to-back-to-back classes, you know, taking 3-4 guys every single class, not taking a huge class than a small class. So you have discrepancies and just keeping that assembly line moving. I see Fillinger is a great fit. I love his floor in the class. I don't see how he would not at least be a contributor just because his baseline traits of very quick and good size. He'll be 280, 285. You know, he's got a 4.25 shuttle at 250 pounds. And even though he's just a tad bit stiff, you can tell that he has good body control and that he's got initial quickness. So once you have that size, that power, that initial quickness, you're already going to get in gaps. You know, you're going to have to be accounted for. That's just all there is to it. It's a really simple math problem here. He's going to be big. He's going to be quick. You know, I don't know how much skill he's going to have. I don't know, you know, how fluid he's going to be. I don't know if he's going to be a guy that arcs around or anything like that. But I know that he's going to be quick and powerful to get in gaps and have to be accounted for. You know, everything after that is gravy when you're talking about a 3-star. I think he has pretty good upside. I'm not saying he's a world beater. But, you know, I think he's going to be a good program guy and a guy that you can, you can build around and just keep that assembly line moving, man. You want that assembly line moving at all times. You're not making money if it's not moving.
And taking consideration with Van, like you said, the high floor guy, you know, at 250 already with a 4.2 shuttle, he kind of and he's strong. He kind of reminds me of Derek Loki, kid Mac Brown took back in the early 2000s out of Denton Ryan. Wound up playing some good backup role for the Texas Longhorns for a couple of years. Just really strong. He kind of reminds me of that guy. You know what you're kind of going to get, but you know that there's so much more left. There's so much more to fill in. There's so much more that Yancey McKnight can do. There's so much more that Oscar Giles can do. And it's not like Vernon where, you know, that they're born ready to play. Fillinger is going to be a guy that you let him marinate. You let him redshirt. You let him fill in, yep. Fill out. You let him kind of do that. And, you know, with the way Texas runs their defensive front, this is a perfect kind of kid for a couple of those spots. This guy fits that role. And if he could do, you know, if he can be just a little more than Derek Loki and his potential that he had, which he actually played in the league for a few years, I think you're going to find a good kid that's going to put in a lot of good time and effort. And it really, it helps the defensive line recruiting for 2020. Because Texas, let's say they want 3, but they would take 4 if it was another big time, an elite, and a war daddy on the end. It really gives them flexibility now with that one spot they know that they're going to leave for Alfred Collins. And then if somebody appears, you know, say a flip late in the cycle, you know, see Texas has a lot of success and some other players take notice, you're looking at an incredibly solid to outstanding potentially defensive line class for 2020. And for all the grief that Oscar Giles has taken, you got to give old Giles credit for that. He's put them in a position to really lock down that defensive line recruiting in 2020.
I mean, if they get Vernon and Collins, I mean, that's like landing two Alex Okafors in the same class. And, you know, Okafor didn't quite hit like his five-star rating. I think he was rated a five-star. But he wasn't also at Texas at the height of development either. You know, I think he only had Muschamp there for a year, and they out of necessity had to play him at defensive tackle some before he was ready. You know, he would have better transitioned at that as an upperclassman as opposed to a sophomore. But you're getting two guys with that type of upside in the same class, it would just be unheard of, you know. But I do want to be fair to Collins and Broughton, you know, and I don't want to assume that Alfred's in the class, but I'm just kind of speaking like he will be. Is those guys will require some development. You know, it's kind of like I equated Vernon's recruitment to Malik, and even, you know, Malik coming in as a five-star, I said, no, this guy doesn't know how to play physical right off the bat. Vernon's going to have to learn how to use his hands better and learn a lot of things, and he's going to have to reshape his body a little bit. You know, he's 280 pounds, and he'll probably play at like 295 or 300, but it's going to look a lot different than it looks right now. Now he can play immediately because he's got the size and the movement skills that are just unheard of. But he's going to have to, it'll take a little bit of patience. He's not a guy that you want to throw to the wolves right away. You'll just get him in. You'll just play him, you play him early in the season, but, it'll be, you know, kind of 20 snaps, not even 20 snaps, maybe 15, 10 snaps a game, just to get his feet wet. But, huge talents. It's right there for the taking. And then, you know, there's the fourth guy could be, you know, I don't know. He's not an elite guy, but he's definitely a good, schematic fit is, Princely Omanmielen. I think they would take him, you know, Fillinger kind of fills that void. If they don't get Princely there, they'll be perfectly fine and be more than happy to get, Broughton and Collins and Fillinger. But Princely is a great fit. And, you know, I'm not sure that we haven't been too high on his chances to end up at Texas, but it's hard for me to rule it out entirely.
With Princely, I don't think he realizes he's a great fit in the Texas defense. I think he believed a lot of what other schools are telling him. And at this point, because early on in the cycle, I think we expected this kid to likely be in the class. He's taken a ton of unofficials up to this point, being down right down the road, of course, at Maynard. But with Princely, I agree with you. I think he's still a take for Texas right now. I say with the emphasis on right now, because I think the more fluid this recruiting D-line recruiting becomes, I think the more that could be less likely. And so, Coach Herman even talked about it at Big 12 Media Days about recruiting, and it's like sometimes – so much has changed in the last 2 years to where, you know, it used to be, you know, you wait till December to bring him in on an official to get him ready, or January. And now you're talking about in the spring, do we bring him in on that official visit? In the summer, do we try to do that to maximize where we're at with an official visit? And it's something that they're always trying to figure out. And with Princely, if you get Collins, let's just say Collins before senior year starts, Princely might be on the outside looking in. He still has OU. He still has A&M. There's still a handful of schools that want him. But
I think that would make him more inclined to go to Texas. I kind of get a Charles Omenihu feel from it, where he wants to play with ballers. You know, Charles wanted to play with Malik and Deshaun and some of those other guys. I kind of feel like Princely, they would be more inclined to want to jump in. I don't know. You know, what I do know is he's not Miles Garrett. I know that he's not Von Miller. I saw that and it cracked me up. I was sitting there, I'm like, what is this edit? What's the value of this? The first time I saw Miles Garrett, he's playing wide receiver in 7-on-7 and outrunning everybody. Is that you, Princely? Is that what you do? Because no, you don't. You are a very good player. You have tons of upside, but you have to kind of have a understanding of what your strengths are, because that way you can make your most informed decision on where you're going to play. If A&M sees you as a Kingsley Keke type, hey man, that's a good fit for real. But you have to embrace it, and you have to go in knowing that that's what it is, that you're not going to come screaming off the edge like Lawrence Taylor or some bullshit.
The good old days.
It's kind of like when I talked to Vondre Sweat last year, and this kid, he told me he was 260, and I don't think I've ever felt more small standing next to somebody that's 6'4", 280. Just a monstrous guy. Like, it's hard to explain that 6'4", 280 can look one way on one person and another way on another. But he just made me feel like a midget. And I was like, so, you know, what do you think about playing nose tackle or something? Oh, no, I'm a defensive end. I said, okie dokie, buddy. And last check is he's well in the 300s already. And now Princely's not going to get that big, but Princely is going to be tough for him to not be 300 pounds. He's just a big kid, man. Embrace your future, embrace what you are, embrace your strengths. And that's how you become that's how you maximize as a player. You know, don't try to become something that you're not. Not an edge rusher. You need to be disruptive on the interior. So, you know, that's not just directed at Princely. It's just towards a lot of kids that they like to hear these great stories that they're like this NFL player. But you're more like this NFL player. You know, it's maybe a guy you never heard of, but he's a 7-year vet, and you know, his family's never gonna have to work again. So be that guy. But yeah, we'll see. I don't think that the story is entirely written on Princely. I don't know. I think if they get Collins, Vernon, and Fillinger, that's a ton of leverage for Texas to be real patient. And either they take Princely or don't. Just wait. They don't have to force it. Let's not forget Prince Dorba. You know, you've been beating the drum for Prince Dorba for years. So, you know, tell us about him. He just committed on, what was it, the 9th, right?
I believe it was on the 10th. Originally, it was scheduled for the 11th, but he was going to be having a travel day, I believe, the day before from Greece.
Yeah, just for clarification, I do think it was the 9th. I think it was supposed to be the 10th, and then he went on the 9th.
Okay.
He moved it a day up, and we were all kind of wondering why he did that. But go ahead. Sorry, I don't mean to.
Right. I think it was because of his Euro trip that he had taken, you know, train to country to country. Yeah, he's a world traveler. You have to understand that about Prince Dorba. He's a man of international. He was hanging out this last time. He's been at the Peach Jam last weekend playing basketball in South Carolina. That's who Prince Dorba is. He's always doing something. He is a defensive end in high school, but will be a B-backer most likely at Texas. The Longhorns have been in this one for the longest. The Longhorns have been the most consistent staff with them for the longest. There have been some pretty big overtures from OU, especially early on, LSU about midway through, and then A&M tried to dip their feet in the pool, but apparently he said they couldn't swim. So at the end of the day, Prince really wanted to make sure he made the right decision. I think this decision was made 6 months ago, to be honest with you, Eric. And I think he just wanted to be thorough. He comes from a really neat story. He's got an incredible backstory from where he came from, who he lives with, going to Highland Park. This kid is a winner. This kid is going to not only be a schematic fit, he's going to be a culture fit. I know we probably say that a lot, but if you'll notice, with this program becoming a more player-led program compared to coach-led, that culture fit, it becomes a factor, a pretty big data point. And Prince Dorba offers that. He's probably 6'2 and a half, maybe 6'3 if he lets his hair grow out a little bit. I'm going to say he's probably between 205 and 215 right now, depending on how much basketball he's played. He's looking for his 4th state championship, which will be in his senior year. Can you imagine? I could never even imagine getting past the 2nd or 3rd round of the playoffs, much less playing for 4 state championships in 4 years at one of the highest classifications in Texas high school football. He got the endorsement from Gil Brandt. He got an endorsement from Jerry Jones. He got endorsements from a lot of really respectable guys in the business and people that know what they're doing in Texas. They hit this out of the park from the start. Give Coach Orlando a ton of credit. Give Coach Beck a ton of credit. They really got Prince in the mix. And I think he's going to be a kid that, after Yancey McKnight plays around with him in his laboratory for a year or two, you might see a monster.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to do the kid a disservice by, you know, comparing him with somebody that he's going to be teammates with, but I can't just help but draw the parallels to him and Joseph Osai. Osai has a similar story about coming to America. Yeah, I was just thinking of Arsenio Hall and Eddie Murphy there, but yeah, we could do a meme on that. They're just so starkly similar as players, their story, their work ethic, their football character, how they're wired, and it makes it really easy to be right about kids like that. You know, I think I had Joseph Osai number 9 in the state, which is higher than anybody else, just because I knew the kid was, I knew how he was wired. I knew how he led practice. I knew how hard he worked. And now we're already hearing about him being one of the hardest workers on the team too. And I think Osai is going to come in and do the same thing. So you have that to start. And then you know that the scheme fit is perfect. You couldn't find a better scheme to highlight this type of athleticism, this type of size. It's just, you know, it was a no-brainer from the beginning. So yeah, it's hard to not, you know, it's one of those things I always say when people, when you rate kids, you should always, take into account where they're committed to and how they're going to be used. Because that'll make you right. Now, if Joseph Osai or Prince Dorbo were going to go play somewhere off the ball, I would not rate him anywhere near as high as I do, you know, but, you know, Osai is a high 4-star. Dorbo to me is a high 4-star because they're going to go to a scheme that fits them perfectly. And if you're trying to get understanding how Dorba is going to play, just go roll back the Georgia tape where Osai had 8 tackles in that game. You know, was pretty prevalent. So Osai is going to blow up this year, and then at one point Dorba's going to do it. We're not going to lose sight of Byron Vaughns, of course, because we hear positive things about him at the position. But you know, it's looking pretty stocked, and we haven't even talked about Clayton Smith. We'll talk about him probably on another podcast. But Justin and I both have a pretty big thing for the 21. Defensive lineman, B backer from it's Texas High, right? Yeah, Texas High.
Texas High. I'll actually see him on Saturday morning at the Prime 21 camp at Arlington Martin.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing that too. If I leave at 5, I can be up there. I could be at Bucky's in Madisonville at 6:15. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Let's talk about some 2020 recruiting just in general. Let's talk about another great schematic fit, which, you know, and we don't want to take these players for granted. Like, they're in the class. I think sometimes people are so quick to put them in the class calculator, and they're really quick to put in their crystal balls, and it kind of takes some of the hype away from the kids and all that. We don't really want to do that, but it's you know, if you're going to play Texas high school football and be on the radar of all these schools, we have to talk about how you fit. Chris Thompson, obviously, Duncanville safety played a big role in holding Zach Evans under 100 yards. Just a really versatile defender. He fits really well in the Texas scheme. And, I wasn't at the opening. Justin, you were. It seemed like, I was kind of following on Twitter from afar. It seemed like you played pretty well, even as a deep safety.
Yeah, the beauty with Chris is that I think he had something to prove at the opening, because at some of the earlier camps this spring, he didn't do as well in the one-on-one sessions. A lot of times they'll lump the safeties in with the corners, and you know, you and I both know that's a pretty big difference. I mean, they're both similar athletes, but Chris had a hard time.
He's going to cover tight ends, not little tiny slot receivers.
And I think he got a little discouraged. I think he had a little bit of a hamstring issue, but the opening was a chance for him to prove himself. And in the sessions where it was one-on-one, he looked really good. I mean, I mean really good from compared to how he looked last time. He still would be a work in progress if he was to ever get stuck on an island, but he's not going to, because that's not where he belongs. He's a man of the people. He needs to hang out in the box. This is a guy that creeps down in, blitzes every about 7 plays, helps stuff the run, and then pick guards, like you said, takes tight ends in the middle of the field and off to the flat. And he's versatile. He could play. He could do some boundary safety. He could do some field safety. I think he could be a joker. I think, and sometimes I think he could possibly be a rover. You never know with that guy.
Yeah, you know. Obviously, inside Texas, we're in pretty good with Theatis Regans at North Shore. He was the defensive backs coach at Lamar when they had Anthony Cook and Deshaun Jameson and Avante Woodard, of course. And he was asked, he likes to keep in contact to see how his boys are doing at Texas and all that. And he has a good lay of the land. And of course, North Shore just played Duncanville in the state championship. And he's like, what's Texas going to do with Chris Thompson if they get him? Basically, they're just going to do what they do with BJ Foster, right? And I go, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what they'll do. You know, that's what I've been writing for about 6 months. So just to give people an idea, if you watched BJ Foster last year, that's kind of Chris Thompson. I don't think Chris Thompson has quite that fluidity that BJ Foster has, but I think he's a very similar player as far as fit. And I think he has been sold a little short as far as his ability in space. You know, I think he's just getting bigger. You know, it's, you're going to lose a little bit the bigger you get. That's part of it. That's the trade-off, and that's why you move him down a little closer to the line. Obviously, Texas has a fantastic scheme for him, man. When they go dime, they have four safeties out there. You know, so it's going to get people on the field quicker. And that boundary joker position is, you know, it's part safety, part linebacker, just part disruptor. He's going to blitz a lot, and, you know, it's very similar to what he's done at Duncanville. So it's kind of like with Dorbo, where it just makes a lot of sense. You know, you can go in there and you're not going to have any stress about how you fit in the program. You know, some kids go to a school still wondering how they fit, and that's not the way to go in.
And we'll when we talk later about Big 12 Media Days and Tom Herman and our team, we'll talk about how Herman and Orlando envision their defense essentially with five solidified spots, and then the other six, you just mix and match and see if you find the right fit. And that's why Chris Thompson's so valuable. That's why a B.J. Foster is so valuable. That's why DeMarvion Overshone is so valuable. And that's why Tyler Owens will be as well. There's so many things that they can do differently. Chris Thompson's going to be a fun one. He's another recruitment, Eric, where, you know, like Dorba, you know, we felt fairly confident that Chris, you know, wants to pick Texas. Essentially, he'll do that on August 1st. It's going to come down to Texas, Auburn, and Ohio State and a couple other schools. I think, like we've written recently, it's a Texas-Auburn battle. I don't want to take it for granted, obviously, and we say that, that he's going to wind up in this cycle for Texas.
Yeah. We thought Jahari was going to be in the class, so this isn't the cycle to be taking guys for granted.
Exactly. There's been some craziness this summer that I know has aged you and I personally. And so with Chris, he's the main consistency has always been Texas. From the time we started talking to him, to the time we started covering him, to the time we got to know him, and the coaches there and some of his teammates, including UT commitment, Jaquindon Jackson. I think Chris is in. I think it'll be good. We don't know for sure, but I think he fits. He's a good fit. He's going to play hard. I like the B.J. Foster comparison a little bit. Definitely not the athlete that B.J. is. But Chris is a dog, and you have to have dogs in the secondary. And I think Texas has a good shot at that one, and that'll definitely be another boost to this 2020 class.
Yeah, Chris is definitely a dog. He fits the culture. He's got that physical mindset. I mean, Duncanville, you're coming from a real culture there. If you come in, you know, North Shore punched everybody in the mouth last year, and then they ran into the mirror when they played Duncanville. You know, they were ready. It was, man, I hope we see that game again. But yeah, I don't want to take anybody for granted, but man, Thompson is a good fit. But yeah, we'll see. It's speaking of taking guys for granted, I think Longhorn fans have been thinking Chad Lindbergh would be a commit by now.
Longhorn fans might not be the only ones that think he would be a commit now, Eric.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Well, that's the thing. Everybody's on their own timeline. Chad, of course, you know, it's funny is that Chad just kind of, if you meet Chad, you're like, this, you know, I think the guy, he's got a, he runs a faster 40. What is it? His 40 is faster than his GPA is higher than his 40. Yeah, that's what it is. So he's got the brains. His brother goes there. His brother's a big time brainiac. I think he had like a 35 on his ACT or something. Chad just kind of fits that. You know, you would think that he would be kind of a Texas kid or whatever. But obviously, he's struggling with the decision a little bit. You know, I think he's, I talked to his mom recently. I think he's still undecided, to be honest with you. I know everybody thinks he's just going to end up at Texas, and, you know, maybe he will. But I think he's got some tough choices ahead of him. I know he's got a good relationship with the line coach at LSU, and he's gone dark, as we get accused of from time to time on the site when we don't post for 5 minutes. Chad's gone a little dark on this, and I think that's good. You know, he's taken his five official visits. I told his mom, I told him he took six. He even went to Columbia for a few days on a mission trip. So we'll see. I'm not entirely sure that he's going to end up in the class, to be honest with you. I know that you would probably disagree, and I can see how. It just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I know that they're lining up Andre Karich in case it doesn't work out. You know, Karich is a stud, man. To me, he's a true tackle.
I think Herb Hand would be completely content with this O-line class and adding Courage. I think you'd be completely content with that. And the main reason is because they put themselves in such good positions with the elite 2021 in-state offensive lineman that you could take a chance on a Carrick if Lindbergh didn't commit or didn't work out. You could take a chance there, which I personally actually think Andre has better, has more upside. I'm a big Lindbergh fan.
I think they would be content doing that just because they know that they've already done everything they possibly can for Chad. You know, I mean, I don't know how they could recruit him any differently or harder. You know, they even told him, hey, look, we're going to offer this other guy. This was before, I think he was on his way to, maybe to Georgia it was, for his official visit. And they told him, they extended that, that courtesy to him by saying that, you know, we're going to offer this kid, and, you know, we still want you, but you know, this is the nature of the business. You know, a lot of schools don't do that. In fact, it, you know, didn't really sit well with Milroe when Alabama took that kid the other day and didn't call him beforehand after telling him how much they wanted him, you know? So I'm just saying the lines of communication are important. And it seemed like Texas has done pretty much everything they can. I don't know. It's they're in a good position where they don't want to take too many more. I think they might just take one more. So, you know, they'll wait out Lindbergh. You know, I think one thing that's happened is I think fans have lost sight of the fact that he's a really good football player. I think he's got more tackle ability than some others think. I know some disagree with that, but I think that there's a pretty big market for the slide move tackle. Maybe he's not the dancing bear that just kick steps and it's so beautiful. And, you know, you lose your mind when you see it. He's so athletic. There's just something to be said for that wall that can get in your way and stop you. I don't think Derek Kerstetter is any more athletic than Chad Lindbergh, and Kerstetter is a serviceable tackle. So, it'll be interesting to see. It's kind of surprising, but you know, we'll see. It's, you know, Chad's a very smart kid. I hope that he's not struggling with it too much, because I do know that this can tend to get to kids. You know, you build these strong relationships with these coaches. Underreported aspect of it, I've heard of kids losing hair, having nightmares and all this stuff. For many of them, it's the first time they actually have to disappoint an adult. When you're 28 and you change jobs, it's a lot easier than when you're 18 and telling somebody that you have to quit. You know, I struggle with that a lot. You know, you didn't want to disappoint people. So maybe he's struggling with some of those aspects of having to tell people no. But I'm not sure who he's going to tell no, and I'm not sure who he's going to tell yes. And I think, I don't know. I just can't, I don't think that he's a lock for Texas.
No, I agree with you. I think at one time he was. And I think after his official visit, which I believe was in April, a lot of people thought that.
No.
When was his official?
No, he came in May. He came in May. I think that. Yeah, I think they were there the same weekend that Broughton was. I think so. I can remember the pictures of all the ladies hanging out. My bad, ladies. What's up? I don't think it was April. But he took an official. That's what I'm saying, is that Texas, I'm not sure what else they can do. You know, he's been there so many times. His brother's there. You know, I just don't know how, you know, you at some point you say, hey, this is what we have to offer you. This is, we want you. We can't overstate it. We can't tell you anymore how much more we want you. This is it. And then you have to make your decision. You know, he's hearing that from a number of different schools because he's a talented player. So he's going to have to sit down and figure it out, come up with his process and go from there. So, you know, I'm not sure what else Texas could do. If he picks a different school, it's like, okay, well, that's why we offered Andre Carriage. Let's go call up Andre.
And then they can start working on 2021.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's like five different podcasts, but yeah, 2021's.
Yeah. Or at least there is one scenario. If Carthage is Tykes Crawford, winds up having an extremely good, senior year in the classroom, there's always that last minute possibility. Got to always think that nugget, because there's a lot of schools that could be a factor around November, December for that gigantic monster.
That's what his huddle should be. Like him just getting after his homework. You know, it's like it focuses in on him. He's writing really hard. You see him, he breaks out. It starts off rough. He starts off with the eraser or the white paper, you know, white out and stuff. He just fixes it, and it just starts turning from Bevo Pride to Chaucer over the course of the semester, you know, his writing. So Yeah, that's what his huddle should be. Man, that kid's a beast. Remember, you were sitting. We were.
I could see it like a bat.
You were at the house last December when we went to go watch Isaiah Hookfin. We got back over here, and you know, we're like, "Hey," you're like, "Hey, check out the Carthage guys." And I'm like, "Man, God damn, this guy's really freaking good." Just you could see it. The best way I think to always check athleticism on an offensive lineman is just to watch him pull. And that kid, I'm not getting in his way. That kid's a monster.
I envision it with a back to school theme when Rodney Dangerfield had to get Mel and Thornton had to get all these classes, all these tests taken care of within like a 2 or 3 day period. And he has all this training. He's, you know, he's in the weight room and he's getting books thrown in front of him while he pumps iron. And it's just, I could see Crawford doing something similar to that.
That's a great huddle montage for him just killing it in the classroom.
The triple Lindy.
Let's see. I've got more notes here. All right. Well, 2021 Milrow versus Preston. Should we touch on that one or what?
Let's go over it for a few minutes. Not too much time, but this is a budding story that we know about that might define the 2021 class for quarterbacks. We know Herman likes to get his guy early, so let's kind of. I've been more with on Preston Stone, getting to know him. You know Jalen Milrow front and back. We'll start with your side of it. What do you think about Milrow and what's his camp? And then we'll shift over to Mr. Stone.
Well, it was a shocking development when Alabama took the kid from North Carolina. I think Joe sent
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah, Joe sent that to our group message, and I was like, "Whoo, buddy!" I knew right off the bat that this is going to be interesting because. I've heard that, you know, they've been pushing for Milrow. He had a committable offer for a long time. They were telling him, you know, that he's their guy. But, you know, Alabama's going to tell a bunch of people that. They're going to leverage each other against each other. That's what you do when you're the top dog. And so the second that happened, I started thinking, man, Texas, it might be Milrow because we know that Texas, they've only have three offers out, Jake Garcia, Preston, and Milrow. And they're not getting Garcia. And they could use a little leverage maybe with Preston because, you know, that's an interesting one. We'll probably keep that offline or maybe happy hours. So this is their opportunity right here. Like, hey, you might be able to get Jalen Milrow. He's a dual threat. He fits it. When I say he's a dual threat, that doesn't mean he's just a runner. He's got a really strong arm. Still needs to learn how to use it and rein it in. Extremely good intangibles. I mean, the kid has the makeup, very similar work ethic to Ellinger. So, you know, he's a program fit. He's a schematic fit. So it's, you know, it kind of seems like this could happen. It's boiling. It's boiling right now. I think he might decide in the next week or two. It could be Texas, Florida State, Florida. I don't think it'll be Alabama. I know he liked A&M. They took Stowers. Alabama took their guy. Florida State is an unmitigated disaster right now. UF really likes him. I've heard he's number one on UF's board. They've got Brian Johnson there as well as Mullen, you know. And so when I say Milrow has some of that Sam Ellinger stuff, well, he has some of that Dak Prescott too because Sam Ellinger has some of that Dak Prescott stuff too. So I'm just really interested to see how I think the staff is going to go all in for Milrow over the next week. I don't know that for a fact. But if Milrow decides in the next week and it's not Texas, then yeah, well, it's just a really interesting development. It doesn't normally unfold like this.
6 months ago, it was Preston Stone. We knew that, and we were just going to ride the wave until it kind of came to fruition. Then Jalen Milrow's name started popping up late. I know it did late last year, but then more and more this spring, more and more schools were coming at him, more and more.
Yeah, let me jump in there real quick because I saw him during the season and they run the ball a lot. He had a 10-3 touchdown interception ratio, which you know that's not much, but it's a traits based evaluation, of course, strong arm and all that. Then I saw him at camp. In January, and I was like, "Holy crap! This kid's got a really strong arm." I went to a game, but I barely saw him throw. So I'm like, "Okay, strong arm. He's built like a freaking dream safety. Like, I mean, he's built like B.J. Foster. You know, speaking of, just a fantastic build, which, you know, you don't want to fall in love with the build too much, but, you know, it's going to tell you that he's durable, especially as a guy that likes to run. But then I started poking around with some college coaches, and it's like, oh man, this kid's intangibles are off the chart. I'm like, well, I didn't expect that, but I didn't have anything to say otherwise, but I was like, okay, so that's just another plus. So what are the questions about the kid? Well, the questions are just about mechanics, taking a little bit of velocity off the ball here and there, stuff like that. So, I was a little late to the Milroe party, but once I started doing my homework, I was like, wow, this kid's a real player. And, you know, college coaches are backing it up. And, I don't want to interrupt you because Preston has that upper body flexibility as a passer that's just ridiculous. The kid, I mean, if he could throw the football field, it wouldn't surprise me. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's a good point about Milroe because, you know, I believe you were pushing some huddle of his from last season in the prospect board just as an athlete. And then to see the jump he's made, whoever says, you know, quarterback yeah. coach has done an unbelievable job with him and deserves tons of kudos. Jalen Milroe's become a guy. He's become a dude now. He's a guy that you have to factor in. But like we said, you know, Preston Stone, this is a kid that had 40 offers before he finished his sophomore season. This is a kid that is very savvy to the recruiting game when it comes to visits and interacting with reporters and other building relationships with coaches. Preston Stone is going to find the best fit for Preston Stone. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a Clemson or an Alabama or a Georgia, which he's got offers from a few of those schools. The thing with Preston Stone is, like you said, he looks like he's been throwing the football his whole life. It looks like he's had the same mechanics since he was 8 years old. He's got just enough of athleticism to make people miss, to move around in the pocket. The truth is, I think Milroe, I don't want to say Milroe is past Preston Stone in my eyes as a quarterback, but in this offense, I think it's hard to deny that Milroe might actually be a better fit. And that doesn't mean Preston Stone isn't. This is a kid that I think is going to fit in a power spread like they like to run. I think this is a kid that can do some spread things, but at the same time, the RPO system. But Milroe, like you said, when he went from season to camp to he's really kind of transformed himself, and he's a guy that people have to pay attention to now. I think Texas would be happy to take him right now. I think they would be thrilled to. I believe the narrative is going to be they would only take one for the class of 2021. And I know that I've heard that Preston Stone would rather make his decision next January. And so with those two nuggets, I wouldn't be surprised if Milroe was the quarterback take if he does choose Texas. And I think if I'm a Texas fan, I'm happy because you don't only get this kid, but you probably got a chance down the road of getting Preston Stone as well. And, you know, like this last class, Carter, JQJ, this is another two quarterback class. I think that's pretty good too.
Yeah. I mean, the pros and cons break out, you know, decently fairly in each quarterback's favor. And, you know, God, the last thing we want is quarterback controversies. We are so happy at Inside Texas to not have to deal with any of that bull. But, you know,
it's James Brockermeyer all over again.
That was so stupid. But hey, thanks to James for putting on like 40 pounds in 3 months. And
we got a lot
becoming an obvious take. James is such a beast. Well, with his brother missing some time this year, James is going to be the one mauling everybody. So with Milroe, Milroe's program fit, I don't, you know, I think Stone's a great kid too. I think they can both probably recruit pretty well within their circle. I think Milroe might be the perceived better offensive fit, but also Preston might be the guy where Herman's like, shit, man, this is the Big 12. I didn't realize I have to score 45 points a game and I need to open things up. So maybe he's starting to see some different angles with the offensive direction that Preston could take him. It's probably something we shouldn't discount. I don't think either of them have an advantage as far as, you know, coming in, learning the playbook and all that. You know, I think that's a wash. But I, man, I don't know, man. I've got a good feeling about Milroe. I wrote that a few, maybe a month or two ago, after talking to some other college contacts that love him, love his intangibles. When you start hearing intangibles about a dual threat, it really opens your eyes because you know they're going to work hard. You know they're going to watch. They're going to get the mechanics. And in these modern offenses, they can simplify the throws to in a way that puts you in a position to succeed, even if you aren't the arm talent that Preston is. But quarterback coaches, man, they fall in love with the arm like Preston. I mean, he's doing all the work for you. You know, you can take credit for him. It's like when I was talking to my buddy at Westfield, that was the defensive line coach. He's like, "Oh man, I coached Ed Oliver." You know, it's like, what do you do to coach Ed Oliver? You know, it's like he's doing all the work for you. You know, Preston's doing all the work for you. You can throw that route that nobody else can cover. Yeah, I don't know, man. Shea Patterson is my comp for Preston. I just don't know how that works out. But I think, I think Preston has tons of upside. I just like Milroe as a guy that's going to come in, put his head down, similar to Rashawn, work his ass off, and stick and wait his turn. Will Preston do that? No idea. I know who I would take. But, you know, Preston's probably the superior prospect if we're breaking it down to some stupid star rating or something.
The beauty of the argument, though, is both of them like Texas. Texas is in a good spot for both, and that makes this situation a lot easier.
That's the values. Both are aware. But I can see Milroe, you know, Milroe's like in Florida State right now, Florida. I don't know, man. I mean, it's good that they're both aware of each other. While the coaches are on the retreat, what do you think they're doing right now? You think they're playing Trivial Pursuit or trying to figure this thing out?
Right now, I think it's probably one half of the group is playing Jenga. The other half of the group is probably watching reruns of Family Matters. I think they're just trying to, you know, this is the way that they get, you know, this is the way they get in the mindset for the season. You know, some people like to play pool and, you know, fish. Some people like to watch Law and Order reruns. I think it's a mixture going on up there right now. I think for the truth is, if a kid like Alfred Collins were to commit to Texas, you know, within the next day or two, which I'm not saying it is hypothetically, I think the coaches should probably take more retreats and quite possibly stay there a little longer just to see how this stretches out. Either way, it's been a nice last couple weeks, especially this last week with Broughton and with Philly.
I think the best way to take advantage of all these Texas donors, the billionaire donors and millionaire donors, is to have a retreat every weekend because they all have like a secondary home or a tertiary home. So I would be exploring all those houses and I would be going Swedish hockey team on it after a big loss and just, you know, tearing it up. Have fun with the boys, man. I hope
note this to Chris Del Conte on Twitter, whoever listens to this, because Del Conte needs these ideas. We can't give them to him. We'll let the fans do that.
Yeah. Hopefully the boys celebrated the last couple wins. All right. Well, let's talk about the team, I guess. You know, we're 51 minutes in. You know, team is about to become a lot bigger news on Inside Texas. So 2 weeks, camp basically starts. We're going to have the depth chart way before anybody else has it. We're going to have the movers on the depth chart, the guys that are pushing for playing time, the guys that are playing well. We're going to have scheme tidbits. We're not going to give away too much, obviously. But team's getting pretty close. Justin was at the Big 12 Media Days. We actually had three people there because Inside Texas is a huge outfit, probably one of the biggest media outlets there is. Justin, how'd it go?
Man, it was a lot of fun. It was my seventh or eighth consecutive Big 12 Media Days. The fun parts are you get to hang out with some of your colleagues and peers in the business, and the others you get a lot of one-on-one time or breakout sessions with players and coaches. And for guys that want answers about different things, from, you know, Baker Mayfield and Terry Bradshaw to actual nickel-based defenses and what the Mike Backer might look like in Austin in 2019, you get those answers. And that's the fun part. That's really the cool part. We bring Ian Boyd, our X's and O's guru, with two reasons there. One, it's his one opportunity a year to know that he's part of the team. So we get to see him. We get to cuddle. I mean, it's a wonderful experience for me personally. And then he goes, and he's a superstar at these things. Eric, you've seen him before. He starts talking to coaches about schemes and things of that sort, and those, they just light up.
No, he's unafraid to ask tough questions, but because he's asking smart questions, they're like, shit, I don't want to answer this, but also, wow, good question. What the hell's going on here? Who are you again? It's like Ian Boyd, you know?
Art Briles asked him if he was a coach from SMU because that was SMU was their first opponent of the season.
Oh, man. It's so funny, dude. But that's InsideTexas.com right there because, he has that sort of – well, and the funny thing about Ian is he's so diminutive and unassuming, but he'll ask you the hardest damn question of all time, and he won't give two shits about it. It's so good. And he's not inflammatory. He's not trying to be, trying to be involved in the whole thing. He doesn't want to be part of the story, but he wants you to tell the story, and he's going to poke and prod until you do.
He's got every year. I think he gets a little bit better. Quite frankly, I think he comes just because I always bring him a Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, but it's a stalwart. He has to be there now.
Well, that's a good. I mean, that's a good.
He's just such a great team member, great writer, great friend, and then of course the precocious Joe Cook, who is a budding superstar in this business, who just does a little bit of everything, and he does it really well.
He had a good time.
Oh, man, I don't know, man. His cheeks are so rosy. I just don't know it. I don't know if coaches are going to take him seriously with those cheeks being so rosy.
Well, you know, I don't know how serious
curly locks.
I don't know how rosy they will either, how serious they'll take him. I do know that Tom Herman knows Joe, and I know that Tom Herman likes Joe. So if that's a starter, wow, a conversation starter, I think that's a good thing.
I don't know if that's a good thing. If Tom Herman likes you, you might. I don't know.
Well, of course. I don't know. Well, that might not bode well for me either, because with
bode well, Justin, not bold well.
I said bode well. Did I say bold?
I know you said bold, and you write bold. You always write bold. It's bode. And every time I tell you it's bode, you say I know it's bode, but you write bold.
I know it's bode. If it sounds like I'm saying bold, it's just because it's 9:15 at night. We're doing
this an hour. I'm sorry. Let's go back to the media days now. That we ruined the podcast.
Okay. Tom Herman.
For bolding.
Tom Herman, much boding. Tom Herman was every year. I wrote this last year. He looked a little more comfortable than he did his first year. Well, this year he looked a little more comfortable than he did last year, and I think he came in with some confidence. And I think a 10-win season will do that. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's pretty confident, anyways. But he did reiterate that there are some talented players in the program. I know last year that didn't get the biggest that was some of that faux rage when Kurt Bowles. I know it's Kurt, but I say Kurt anyway. When Mr. Bowles asked him if he had any talent on the roster, he said, this year, yeah, there's some. There's still some talent. And so he's having fun with it. The best part is the breakouts, because you get to ask the positional question. You know, stuff that we're probably going to read, you know, by the time people hear this, they're going to read in the humidor about how the mic backer is a big question mark this year. And we've written that so far in spring. But when you hear it from Coach Herman, it really resonates what they're looking at, what they're trying to accomplish, getting Deli potentially ready, getting Caleb Johnson potentially ready. If Jawan Mitchell can contribute now or requires a red shirt, if Floyd is ever going to have a shot at playing, you know, he has a lot of question marks.
And Justin, just to interject, and the question is about Mac is obviously relevant, but the reason that everybody's worried about Mac is because it seems like Rover is settled with McCulloch, right?
Yeah, for right now, yes. But I think you're going to see McCulloch on certain defenses play inside as well, you know, in the dime peso type stuff they like to run.
Well, without a doubt, that's the truth. But it's so they found one linebacker. Now they're looking for the second one. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think, you know, Osai is always going to be that B-backer type. And so I think – but I mean, he even mentioned there would be chances where Osai could be at Rover. And so there's some things.
Well, we've written that.
We've written a lot of it. I just like hearing it from Herman. You know, he even told us when we asked some of these questions, he said, man, y'all got really good intel. And I took that as a compliment, because a lot of the things we had written coming out of spring ball are things he confirmed.
It's like when I asked Quandre Diggs, I said, Eric with Inside Texas, and Quandre Diggs goes, Inside Texas, where do y'all get your information from? one of the biggest compliments I've ever had.
Ian asked him a question about the defense, and Quandre told him, well, you're at Inside Texas, you're going to know better than I would. And so, you know, Quandre's a fan of the site, so that's always a pleasure. But a lot of the stuff I said lined up. And a lot of the stuff that you hear, you know, all the shots being taken at the team, the negative recruiting, the shots at Sam Ehlinger, to him, it's irrelevant. And to it's good that you don't have, you know, Mac Brown used to worry about that stuff a little bit. He might even tell you he would be a little paranoid, if you can believe that. And so with Herman, I'd say this is the polar opposite of that. Very self-assured, knows he's got his guy at quarterback. Herman was cool, calm, and collected, and just enough snark to let you know he's smarter than you. And we got a lot of good stuff from him. I'm looking forward to writing some of this humidor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're going to be good. You know, I think they're going to win. I think they're going to go 11-2. I think they win the conference. I know it's hard for a lot of UT fans that have been living through this decade to digest. But it sets up really well for them. We're going to write a lot about it in the humidor about, you know, what the strengths and the weaknesses of the team are. Got a lot of good intel. Justin obviously has a lot of good intel. But I don't think there are any excuses for this team to not win the conference. I mean, maybe a fluke fumble or some bullshit like that, maybe, I guess. But the team sets up really well, and that's, you know, that's testament to what Herman has built.
Well, absolutely, and he even mentioned it. It's gone from a coach-led, it's transitioning from a coach-led team to a player-led team. He's got a leadership council, guys like Sam Ehlinger and Jeff McCulloch and Malcolm Roach, and these guys, they keep the team in line. And if anybody that's played sports or coached knows, when the players have bought in and everybody's on the same page, a lot of good things can happen. And I wanted to ask Herman about, you know, could he have started at Texas with a better situation than a freshman, eager, strong, full of piss and vinegar Sam Ehlinger? Like, to me, it would almost be similar to Colt McCoy being the first quarterback that Mac Brown had, even though he did have Major, and Major did pretty well. But for Herman to have a guy that's kind of like him, you know, that there was a lot of back and forth with those two guys. A mutual respect is the way he described it. And so the fact that Sam can be open with him, this is the fact that Sam can tell him, hey, this play doesn't work. And, you know, Herman's pretty adamant. Look, if you do this, this, and this, very analytical, then you get this result. And Sam can say, I don't like this play. This play sucks. And they move on.
You know, I think that's a really good point. But I also think that's obviously one of the few advantages that he had when he got there, was that there was a quarterback in his image. And I think, you know, I'm not a detective or anything, but I think that Herman and Ehlinger are wired very similarly. I think they just have a very similar approach to sports. And they're going to let their nuts hang. And that, I think that works perfectly with Herman. I think they're going, you know, they probably might have, you might need somebody on the headsets that are going to talk them out of going for it on fourth down and letting Ehlinger run for it. I think they're very, they're in the same image. Do you get that sense?
Absolutely. You know, because they both want the same goal. They both have the same goals, which is essentially winning. Both are highly competitive. Both are highly focused. And both have a pretty good, snarky, sarcastic personality when you get to know them. And so I think that comfortableness, a lot of times coaches don't want players to be comfortable because it leads to contentment. It leads to, you know, a 500 record. With Sam, he knows he doesn't have to worry about that. Sam's always striving, always looking towards the next play, not worrying about LSU's defense, worrying about, you know, La Tech's defense. I think he has that guy. And like he told us, he learned as an offensive coordinator, if your plays are with, you know, the plays you're calling, you need to be on the same page so much with your quarterback, like he described with Rice's Chase Clement, to where if the players can't tell you how they really feel, how close really are you? How good of a program do you really have? How good is synchronized is your team really? And I think the uber focus of a maniacal focus of Tom Herman plus a kid named Sam Ellinger, who is going to be the last person that ever wears number 11 at the University of Texas and is just now beginning a legacy that it's so much going to be so much fun to watch and cover over the next couple of years. That's why, you know, you say 11-2, I cringe at first, but then I look on paper and then I remember games last year, outcomes. And then I think 11-2 is actually probably the expectation because of so many things, including Sam Ellinger, who, like you said, has a quarterback. Herman has a quarterback in his image. And it's a good relationship. And it's completely beneficial to everyone involved, including Tim Beck, to Colin Johnson, to John Bianco. It's a good marriage, so to speak.
Yeah. I just think I think that Herman and Ellinger, they mesh well. And also, you know, we've always been huge on Sam on the site. We're not trying to be fanboys. We are fanboys of evaluation. You know, we tell you what we think about a player, strengths, weaknesses. And it was funny when the second Herman got the job, I told the board, I said, oh, my God, this is a match made in heaven, because I do think that Ellinger and Herman are wired similarly. There's a lot of there's just a lot of mental fortitude and a lot of you know, I'm trying to say this without using expletives. What, like, they're going to ram the ball down your face and you're going to have to deal with it, and they both feel that way. And if they can't do that, then they're going to throw it out wide and probably score that way. So I just think that they're very similar people. They actually remind me of Jesus Shuttlesworth too, which is a whole different story. But I don't know, man. 11-2. What do you think?
I think 11-2 is probably the top end. I think a 10-3. Possibly 10-4, depending on what happens in the bowl. My only question is, you know, keeping Sam upright, which I think this is going to be an even better offensive line than it was last year, and that's with losing three starters. Keontae Ingram, a year older, is going to take some wear and tear off of Sam long term. Whittington, I feel like, is going to have an instant impact because not only have we heard and seen great things from him so far in Austin, but Sam Ellinger gushes over him. Tom Herman was trying to find a comparison to somebody as prepared as he was when he arrived. That's another plus. This team scores a lot of points, and the defense, if it's just good enough to keep them in games, which I think, you know, how Orlando does it each year is they fit, mix and match until they get into conference play, and then they pretty much play matchup from that point on. I think if all those factors come together, it has to be 11-2. If they can beat LSU and OU in the same year, and I feel like they're going to split that. And I don't know which one split, but I feel like they're going to split that. And I think they're better than LSU, but I also think I know what Jalen Hurts is capable of. He's not anywhere on the same wavelength as Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield, but Lincoln Riley does a lot of good things on offense. And so I don't know if they split that. I don't know who those two losses are, but I'll agree with the 11-2. But to the two losses, maybe at TCU, maybe they come up and bite them because they've had their number so much here in the last 6 or 7 years. Iowa State at Iowa State, probably late in November, I believe. That's always tricky, especially now with Joe Cook's crush, Matt Campbell, doing a great job out there, and Ian Boyd's trademark pump fake Purdy tossing the rock around. So I'll give you 11-2. I don't know where those two losses are going to come from. I think they split OU and LSU, and TCU and Iowa State would probably be the other one. But it puts them in the Big 12 championship, which I think they'll be ready for that. And if they win that, this sucker's going nuclear.
Yeah, I think it's going to go nuclear because I'm not too worried about some of those teams. But, you know, that's for a different conversation.
For any of your listeners right now in the Austin area, I will be on 104.9 FM, The Horn, from July 29th to August 2nd. August 2nd is the opening of fall camp. So we are about less than 3 weeks from actual football. It's getting closer, and that's kind of why I love July and August, because they're two of our busiest months for you and I personally of the year. But once we get through those, it's just football from that on, from that point on, and that's so much it makes our jobs a lot easier. Just kind of a quick shout out there. Looking forward to having the show there, and looking forward to being back in Austin. So just a little small plug there. And go to InsideTexas.com at all times.
Yeah, InsideTexas.com will fit all your needs. Justin, I appreciate it.
Nothing but love, brother.
seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12.